Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone. It is the 5th of September, and as we start our day together like this here on Faith Radio Mornings, I offer the reminder that first and foremost, as we get up and are doing our day, we are sons and daughters of a king in a kingdom that knows no end, that is Jesus Christ. And I find that a helpful reminder as we do this show and talk through the news each morning here, especially in light of when I wake up, see all the ongoing political and theological rancor of the day and recognize that we may all have our leanings and our opinions, and all of that is eminently okay, of course. But at the end of the day, our allegiance is not to Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative. Our allegiance is to this King of the Kingdom, Jesus, and to one another. For we are, in the words of Paul in Philippians 3, citizens of heaven. And I'm your host for the show here on Faith Radio Mornings, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Glad to be joined in studio by Logan Roush and Paul Perreault, who along with Rachel Sutton produce the show, keep the news flowing, and make sure things run at least mostly smoothly as we do our 2 hours together. It's so enjoyable to be in studio with them. And just know as listeners all around our affiliates and through the country streaming that the three of us do spend time before the show praying for all of you across the country. We really are sons and daughters together in this great journey of faith. Well, I can say as I'm looking forward to the show this morning that I don't even really know where to start with the news from yesterday. We've got mayhem in Judge Kavanaugh's hearings. We've got people getting arrested there, tossed out of the room. Senators breaking all decorum. We'll play some clips on that a little later this morning. And of course, then there's Nike, the famous shoe company, coming out in support of NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick's protest of the American flag. Hard to know how to process both sides of that conversation. Tropical storms in Florida. A Bob Woodward book coming out saying the White House has always been in full meltdown mode. It makes my head spin. And I find it helpful to remember in those situations when I don't know how to process all of this, that again, what I said at the beginning of the show, that there is a kingdom that we're a part of, and it is a king that the book of Hebrews talks about we can fix our eyes upon. So our quote from this morning as we start our show comes from the book of Philippians, in which Paul writes this about what matters to him. He says in Philippians 3:7 that whatever things were gained to me, those things I have counted now as loss for the sake of knowing Christ. More than that, I count all things to be loss in the view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things. I actually count them now as rubbish. Love that word, rubbish, so that I may gain Christ and may be found in him. And that just gives me, as I'm starting my day, and I'm sure as you're heading off to work or getting the kids to school, just that pause to remember that Jesus is there and present and real. And I'm looking forward to the show ahead. We've got Justin Gibney, friend of the program here, as our first guest. He is calling out of Atlanta, and he leads the AND campaign. He'll remind us about the work that he does. It is an organization that focuses on representing those who are underserved in the urban communities, for whom maybe Republican and Democrat ideals and policies have sort of left behind. So they're carving out a middle way in Atlanta to help people in need. I'm going to ask Justin about some prison reform conversations coming out of California. And after Justin, we've got our regular Wednesday guest, Kent Kaiser, joining us in studio. And he will talk with us about the Judge Kavanaugh situation. He's worked on political campaigns and other events within the communications area. Curious on Kent's thoughts on that too. So lots to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. And up next, we'll be joined by Justin Gibney of the AND campaign. It's 9 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and happy to be joined on the line by friend of the program, Justin Gibney of the AND campaign, that does a lot of work in the city of Atlanta, carving out space where some maybe of the Republican or Democrat ideals have failed, to make sure that people are able to just receive the realities of life that are needed. And so, Justin, thanks so much for joining the program.
Hey, Peter, how's it going? Thanks for having me. Yeah, I don't know about you, Justin. I wake up in mornings like this, and maybe you heard the opening bit, and my head just spins with the news, and I find it helpful to at least remember that we are king, you know, sons and daughters in this kingdom as we walk out this world together. Because boy, I'll tell you what, you get aligned with any specific political party, and it's going to make your head spin.
Yeah, at this point, especially, I agree with that.
So you're down in the Atlanta area. Remind our listeners again what the AND campaign is all about. I described a little bit of it, but I would love to hear it from you.
Sure. The AND campaign is basically a coalition of biblical Christians who believe that our interaction in culture and politics should reflect the kingdom. It should reflect the gospel. And what that means to us is that we have to represent the love and truth of the gospel, the compassion and the conviction, the righteousness and the justice, and not one or the other. We see that especially our political landscape likes to force people to either one side or the other, whereas you can represent love, but all that truth and biblical value stuff you have to leave at home, or you can represent those biblical values, but you have to leave the justice side of it at home. And we think that's a very poor option. And so what we're saying is, as Christians, we need to be Christians first when we enter that space, and make sure that we're representing love and truth, compassion and conviction in all that we do, which means not that we can't be in parties. Most of the people associated with us do participate in partisan politics, but they're able to transcend partisan politics when neither side is in line with the gospel.
That's great. Great stuff, Justin, on that. I'm just reminded of the tension that described Jesus in the book of John, when it says that he was filled with both grace and truth at the same time. And that really is the model moving forward. And, you know, that applies to the criminal justice system as well. And I wanted to get your take on some of the policy shifts that have come out of California here recently, where they've done away with the bail system because it was seen as fundamentally unfair and favoring those who maybe had more wealth or more means, while people who didn't have the opportunity to financially account for the bail reality, that they got just sort of stuck in prison, whether they were guilty yet or not. And that really can wreak havoc on people's lives. So give us a sense of what's happening out of California and the shifts that are being made there.
Yeah, sure. You said it very well. California basically had a bill signed that would abolish the cash bail system and would give judges the discretion to decide whether to detain people based on the risk that they pose to public safety. Under our current system, in most states, people are penalized for being poor. We all know that someone could commit be accused of committing a very violent crime, have a long record, and sometimes still get out before someone who may not even be accused of a violent crime simply because how much money they have in their pocket. I don't know about you, Peter, but I haven't heard a good reason to base how long someone's in jail on how much money they have. And the truth of the matter is, poor people, they lose their job, they have less, you know, they lose their homes, their families suffer. And so I think we definitely need to take the role that money plays in our justice system, take that out as much as possible. And so I support California's move in this regard, and I'm glad to see that this effort is moving along.
Well, and I think you said it well there, too, in the sense that if you have financial means, it kind of perpetuates itself. You have more of an ability and more of an opportunity. And there's some people who are starting well behind the starting blocks in these situations. And it just keeps shoving that backwards because they, you know, I think I underestimated the significance of just getting accused of a crime and not being able to get out of prison, that that's going to wreak havoc across the board on your family life, your financial life and everything. It's one of those, I think, untalked about things in our policies.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends and family members who have experienced that. I had a friend who I worked on a campaign with who had lost his key. He was trying to get back into his house. He gets arrested and is in jail for weeks while trying to get into his own home because he could not pay to get out. So those are some of the situations that people get into. And we have to understand as well, policy making is hard. It's often imprecise. There are unintended consequences. It's simply not a perfect science. So I'm not here to say this is a perfect bill, but the fact that it is taking money out of the equation is a huge step forward, and we should be supporting things like that, even if they're imperfect.
Yeah, it sounds like part of the other side of it, like, as you mentioned, is we'll have to wrestle through a bit, is what are the criteria by which somebody is judged to be a low risk or a moderate risk or a high risk in terms of whether they remain incarcerated during the bail time? And that seems to be where the conversation is now, right, Justin, in terms of how does a judge decide what the risk level is for somebody?
Yeah, and they're basing that off things that I think are very reasonable. I think criminal history, whether the offense was violent or not, failures to appear in court beforehand. And so I think those are fair measures. Now, what the critics are getting to is those aren't perfect measures, and those still may lead to some bias against minorities. That is possible. I'm not going to throw away that possibility. However, we're getting closer to fairness. And you can't take the human element completely out of this, right? The judge is going to have some discretion. Prosecutors are going to have some discretion. I think I've said this before, I'm from taking a little more of this discretion out of the hands of the prosecutor. But for the folks who are criticizing to take all discretion away from judges, that's not necessarily a good thing either. And so at some point we have to trust the system to some extent as we try to continually make the system better. But taking all discretion away, I don't think that's the way to go. I think this is a huge step, and to criticize such a big step like this, I get it, but I think we need to be a little more realistic about where we're at and know that this is a process.
And that's Justin Gibney of the AND campaign. And Justin, are the judges consulting with the prosecution and possibly the defense, as well as psychologists and looking at history? Are those some of the ways they're trying to at least remove some of the variables out of this, or what are some of the other criteria they're looking at?
Yeah, so this is all going to be based on a hearing. And so at the hearing, the prosecutor can speak, the defense can speak, and they can give mitigating factors. So what happens, and just to be clear, I'm not a criminal attorney. I've done some criminal law. I'm not currently a criminal attorney. But usually what happens is the judge will give you an opportunity to give, mitigating factors. Hey, he has a job. This is, he has kids. He has to take to school, blah, blah, blah. Those factors aren't being taken away. So there's criteria, but it's not based simply on that criteria. And so both sides will have a chance to somewhat, plead why bail should be given or denied. And I think that's why this is a fair, let's leave it at that. I think this is a fair way to go about it, a lot more fair than leaving it up to the amount of money in somebody's bank account.
Well, and I think, as you said, it represents a positive step forward in terms of just evening the playing field a little bit on some of these really difficult conversations. Justin, we're going to take a short break, and we come back. I want to ask you about an event coming up in your life where you're partnering with Josh McDowell around something called the New Apologetic, where you're focused on unity and compassion and justice as part of the gospel in sort of this postmodern era where I think fighting for truth in the kingdom can be difficult, not from a dogmatic standpoint, but we don't want to divide anymore so much under dogma. We want to come together in some of these things. So I'd love to hear your take with that next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's just about 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and thrilled to be joined on the line by Justin Gibney of the AND campaign, a regular contributor to the program. And Justin helps us understand as listeners just he says this so articulately, the tension of grace and truth by which we walk in our policy matters and as people as the kingdom. And Justin, I know recently you were part of the One Race movement that happened in Stone Mountain, Georgia. I would love for you to tell our listeners about that event and what happened there.
Yeah, it was an awesome event here in Georgia a couple of weeks ago. And what we did was we went to Stone Mountain. For those who don't know, Stone Mountain in Georgia is actually where the Ku Klux Klan was revived. And so there was a ceremony where the first cross was burned on top of Stone Mountain, Georgia. And so the One Race movement, their idea was to go back to that place because it was actually a Methodist minister who conducted the ceremony. We wanted to go back to that place as a church. And so they brought thousands of believers to Stone Mountain, Georgia, to basically come out against, to pray fellowship, and to come out against racism and commit to working towards racial justice. And it was just a wonderful event. Again, there was thousands of believers, great speakers, and everyone was focused on addressing this problem. Not being colorblind, not saying that we're the same in every way, but we have oneness in Christ and being focused on that oneness of Christ and making things better, trying to reflect the kingdom and how we go about our differences and how we treat one another.
Well, and it calls to mind, I love the I Have a Dream speech from Martin Luther King Jr. And when he cries out basically, let freedom ring even from Stone Mountain, Georgia, to recognize that that was the founding place of what was such a destructive influence in our culture, the Ku Klux Klan, to be on that site and to be part of redeeming that, it had to just be a profound experience.
Oh, it was awesome. It's something I won't soon forget. And I'm just thankful for the One Race movement, all that they're doing, and really seeking out those who have a heart for reconciliation, who have a heart with dealing with the hard questions, because that's some of the things we pointed out. This isn't an easy conversation. It starts with a conversation and a hug, but it goes into some very hard work within reconciliation, and just seeing people who are willing to do that work and not take any cop-outs or say, you know, I'm innocent, so I don't have to participate. Everyone knowing that whether, you know, you've been a part of racial injustice personally or not, that we all have something to do with it. As followers of Christ, we should all be trying to make it right.
And it just seems like you can't walk away from those kinds of events without being fundamentally changed on some level. Just the experience of it no longer is this theory or conversation we're having over coffee or whatever. It really is being on the front lines of what it is, that what we can be together, you know, as we bridge these divides.
Exactly.
Well, we're divided on so many levels. I know another movement and opportunity of which you participate is called the New Apologetic, and this is bringing people together around just engagement and advocating for biblical justice, gospel with witness in a modern era. And you're working with Josh McDowell on this project. Tell us more about what's happening. It's coming up on September 16th here, where you're just it's an apologetic for the next generation.
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that justice doesn't start with us. That justice starts with God. And what I want to do is lay out a biblical framework and show people how the Bible speaks about justice, how the Bible speaks about unity and compassion, and why it's incumbent on us as followers and servants of Jesus to do it the way that he's done it. And so I'll basically be laying out the biblical case for justice, for reconciliation, and unity within the body. Because, you know, everything that's called justice isn't really justice, right? And so we may have to make sure that what we're doing has a biblical root. And so one of the things I'll be doing is kind of dismantling kind of the social gospel and saying, well, this isn't actually what the gospel was telling us to do. And on the other side, kind of what I call the pious bystander, which is, you know, we go to church, we pray, we preach the gospel, and that's where it ends. And I think the gospel cannot be reduced to either of those two. There is a way that we can represent Jesus in our words, we can speak the gospel, and also live it out. The Ann Campaign talks a lot about orthodoxy and orthopraxy, which is the practice of that comes with the doctrine. And so I really want to expose that and give people a biblical framework and apologetic for what we've been talking about.
And how do you, as you're doing this conversation and navigating this life, and as you are saying, you live within the orthodoxy of what is justice, but also the orthopraxy of how we live that out as believers, how do you continue to walk that out, Justin, day in and day out, without getting frustrated at times, without getting disillusioned or disheartened, recognizing the world really is a broken place? How can you stay a person of peace and conviction in the midst of those things?
I think number one is prayer. I think a lot of fellowship, but also putting things into perspective. Why do we actually seek justice? And this may sound a little bit crazy, but we actually don't even do it for the oppressed. We do it to glorify God. And so at the end of the day, if I'm doing it for that reason, then whether, you know, my accomplishments are big or small, I'm actually, you know, I'm actually living righteously, and I'm actually accomplishing what I need to, which is the glorification of God. And if we keep it within that perspective, it makes a lot more sense. Also understanding that we already have the victory. We know how this ends, and that we should always be hopeful. I mean, the Bible says over and again why we have hope, the joy that's deep and abiding within us. Doesn't mean that I don't have tough times or frustrating times, but that helps me get through it. And just knowing that so many people before me have fought that same battle for that same reason.
And Justin, you know, we have just about a minute left, a little bit longer, and I'm curious your thoughts on just somebody like me who might be living in a primarily white suburb of the Minneapolis area and obviously divided geographically so often as we are in these conversations. What would you recommend to somebody like me or our listeners that find themselves in the same situation, some first steps to get involved more fully in that orthopraxy you reference, where it can become part of our life and not just conversations we're having?
Yeah, seek relationship. Seek relationship with, you know, urban Christians that may be in your area to see what the needs are, to see how you can be helpful, and be willing to enter into a real partnership with those people, which can mean shared authority, can mean, you know, that we are really talking as equals and really trying to help one another out, not lord over one another or, you know, always take the wheel. I think if we can build relationship, then we can actually advocate together, we can serve together, we can do all these things. If we kind of humble ourselves and take those relationships on, there's a great opportunity for the body of Christ to do the work that he's called us to do.
Justin, thanks for joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings. I love your perspective, the balance of both the grace and the truth, and the conviction that if we're really going to represent the kingdom together, it takes all of us coming together in unity around the same cause. So I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Pete. I appreciate it.
We'll take a break for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. And in the second half of our first hour, Kent Kaiser will join us in studio, and we'll talk about the Judge Kavanaugh hearings and the mayhem that was part of that. So lots more to come this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, I know we got a lot of rain here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul yesterday, but our friends listening down in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, boy, you're really feeling it down there. Major flood stage activities are underway in Cedar Rapids as the Cedar River continues to rise. City officials said yesterday the gates to the city's underground storm sewer system are closed. Just one of the things that's set to happen. Parks will be closed as the river creeps up at 15 feet this morning, and it is expected to crest at 16.2 feet early Sunday morning, which is just above major flood stage. So thoughts and prayers with you in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, coming from Minneapolis and the rest of our listening audience. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Dr. Dale Gentry, who is helping us understand the theological implications of forest fires.
What we're seeing now, as I mentioned, you know, this buildup of fuels over the past century that's causing what used to be those low-intensity frequent fires are turning into high-intensity fires that wipe out the whole forest. And so, you know, in the years following, the trees do come back. I think we, you know, sometimes we're a little heartbroken to go through there, and we've lost the shade and we've lost some of the wildlife, but some of the wildlife really likes the fires. And so, you know, one of the messages I try and tell my students is that fires can be tragic if people die or people's homes are consumed. They can be tragic in some ecosystems, but in many circumstances, they're good. And I think when we think about stewardship, what we are now striving towards as we've learned our lesson a little bit is to allow fires burn when they're good fires and put out the ones that are putting people's lives and homes at risk, and try and have the discernment to be able to tell the difference between the two.
Love that conversation with Dale yesterday. Just the idea, the biblical idea that, you know, we can rise from the ashes and that death begets life. There's so much in that conversation around forest fires with Dale. If you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com. And he's got 16 minutes of great material. Well, sitting across from me is Dr. Kent Kaiser, our regular Wednesday guest. And I'm going to ask Kent, he was in California this last weekend as part of a bagpipe festival in the Highland Games. And he hobnobbed and rubbed shoulders with some pretty famous people. So curious what Kent has to say about that next on Faith Radio Mornings.
The Bible says that some difficult things change only through prayer and fasting. This is Jim Garlow, and I'm calling on you to do just that. Pray and fast for racial healing across our land, to allow the Spirit of God to break your heart for the sin of racism in our culture. Take a moment right now to pray with me this prayer. Lord, our nation is hurting. We cry out for racial healing. We refuse to be in denial of the sin of racism that can impact us in ways we do not always recognize. Help us recognize those ways without hesitation or excuse. If we have been victims of racism, we refuse to live in bitterness. If we have harbored racism, we repent. Help us all to become catalysts for racial healing. Amen. There's more at jimgarlow.com. to consider in this precarious moment in our history.
Well, I love the bagpipes of Dr. Kent Kaiser, who's the chair of the communications department here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And Kent, I know when you were on last week, you were previewing for us that you were going to participate in a Highland Games festival by doing the bagpipes. This turned out to be a pretty big deal. It wasn't just six people in the room listening. Tell us about what happened.
Yeah, it was huge. It was in Pleasanton, California, which is near San Francisco, and it was great. It was 2 days of competition. Normally when you go to competitions, it's one day, but this was two, and on both days, at the end of the day, you can tell how massive it was by we went out onto the track in front of a grandstand at this fairgrounds, and 500 of us bagpipers are playing for over 2,000 people each day. And that's at the very end of the day after we've actually competed. And it was just, yeah, it was just massive. Was just so many booths with food and anything Scottish, of course. All the clans have their booths, and there's a car show and rugby and archery and soccer and just so much going on. It was just a great, great time. So we were piping under the palms.
Well, and you left the fame and fortune here of Faith Radio Mornings, you know, to head out west to you know, seek that glory. And you actually ran into a pretty famous actor, from what I understand. You're texting us some pictures.
Yeah, there are actually a couple of them. And this is something we don't get at other games, but there we are in California where all the stars live. So, yeah, Thor Bjornsson was there from Game of Thrones. And the guy is massive. You know, shaking his hand is like grabbing onto a baseball mitt. And he tried to crush my head, but I'm too thick-headed. So, but that, I got a picture of him trying to do it. But super nice guy, actually, just extremely kind and generous. You know, to give autographs and everything else. So it was great.
Oh, what a thrill. Well, I know you know his voice. It's Ken Kaiser here of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. If you want to join the conversation as we talk about some of the news items of the day, you can call the studio or text in at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Love having Kent in the conversations. And, of course, there's no shortage of things to talk about. Yesterday, I watched quite a bit of the Judge Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. I guess that's what they were supposed to be. But, boy, it turned into something different and a whole lot of mayhem was going on in that courtroom.
I welcome everyone to this confirmation hearing on the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like
Supreme
to be recognized for a question
States.
Before we proceed.
So as Senator Grassley was trying to chair up this confirmation hearings, Kamala Harris, the senator out of California, kept interrupting, but she was just one of many of the Democrats that had actually a strategy meeting over the weekend saying they were going to disrupt the hearings in just this way.
Right, trying to create a kerfuffle there, and they just want to they're in a strategy to try to frame this in one way or the other. The Republicans are, of course, framing it that they've given out more information about this candidate than any candidate in history, but the Democrats are complaining that there's only X% of the documents that have actually been released to them, and they were given a whole bunch of documents the night before the hearing started, and they and their staffs can't read very fast, and so they were complaining about that. But, I mean, the reality is that there's no way that the Democrats can stop this nomination if the Republicans hold together. And there's probably going to be a couple of Democrats at least who vote for this nominee. So it's all just a dog and pony show for the Democrats to create this controversy.
Well, and that really was the objection of Dianne Feinstein. She articulated what was going to be the strategy moving forward, which is to object over the lack of transparency, at least in their estimation.
93% of the records from Kavanaugh's tenure in the White House have not been provided to the Senate, and 96% has not been given to the public.
Is this just grasping for straws? Is there a legitimate objection here? Is this political gamesmanship? What's happening? And I've got to believe if the shoe was on the other foot, right, that we would see the same kind of objections from the Republicans to the Democrats. So what's happening here?
It's true, but what's really different here is that this White House has not shied from putting forth candidates who have a big, long paper trail. And so that's the difference between this and any previous nominee. The Trump White House, it used to be, in every previous White House in memory, what happened was that there would be a committee that would come up with names, and then those names would be circulated among different agencies and different officials, and it's basically death by committee. So the nominees' names would fall off the list one by one by one as these different ones would object to it, even before it got to the Senate. And it was always because of, you know, their paper trail. And so, you know, in the past, it was a really negative thing to have a paper trail. And what you wanted was a nominee who didn't really have one. And so there wouldn't really be much to present to the Senate. The difference here is that this White House isn't putting up these nominees by committee. They have basically one office coming up with extremely strong candidates for all the courts, for all the federal courts, but here in this case for the Supreme Court. And these strong candidates come with a long history, long paper trails, paper trails that are so massive. I mean, like I was saying, there were some documents that were given to the Senate the night before, 46,000 documents. I mean, if you can imagine, I mean, this is a person who's been prolific in his work, and there's no way that they're actually wanting to read through all of these. This is just a matter of creating a controversy. They know about this guy. There's nothing that's hidden or secret. They're not going to find something in these documents with which to honestly object. And so it's ridiculous. But that's what's going on here, is that this White House is actually putting up extremely well-qualified, long-standing jurists who do, in fact, have paper trails. And so that's what's really unique about this particular process. And the Democrats are just seizing upon this opportunity because it's the first time there's ever been candidates being put up for the federal courts who actually have an extensive work record and paper trail.
Well, it was fascinating because, of course, the Republicans came out and said, well, we managed to review all those documents, no trouble, in the dead of night. And I thought, I really wish I would have had them alongside of me when I was trying to go through school and read 46,000 pages myself, because I fell way behind. But it wasn't just the rancor in the Senate and the courtroom. I mean, there was people getting arrested outside of the courtroom. There's people getting chucked out. More on that.
We won't vote on Senator Blumenthal's suggestion. We won't follow your suggestion.
It's a motion, Mr. Chairman.
To go into executive session, motions would not be proper at this time.
So there is people trying to shout over the senators that were observing the proceedings. And as part of the rancor that's going on here, is it's because it's such a crucial seat. We're talking about tipping the balance of the court in favor of the conservatives at this point.
Well, it's been sort of conservative, but now it will be seriously conservative. But by only 5-4 majority. So it's not like it's a supermajority here or something. But no, the hysteria here is unprecedented. We've got ads running in Maine, for example, against Senator Collins, who will be up for re-election in 2 years. Where these feminist groups are saying that, you know, a vote for Kavanaugh is a vote to kill them. Literally, they are saying that a vote for Kavanaugh is a vote to kill them. How shrill can they be? And there are other messages in these ads where they're trying to convince Collins that she should be a hero, is their word, and vote against Kavanaugh, or they are going to put in, either they're encouraging people each to put in $20.20 towards a fund to take her out, essentially, in 2020. And so just, it's absolutely insane to think that the vote for one Supreme Court justice would result in somebody being killed. You know, but that's what their ads are saying. And that's just one of the messages in this 30-second ad that I saw that is so shrill and just hysterical, really.
It is. The rhetoric and being described that a vote for Kavanaugh is being complicit in evil. I mean, I just think we get to the point, right, where we all begin to sort of tune it out because we realize how ridiculous the whole thing
becomes. Well, I hope that Collins realizes how ridiculous it is. I suspect she does. She has spoken favorably of Kavanaugh after she met with him, and I hope that these ads don't sway her somehow. But you never know with how nervous senators are, or any elected officials are, about being reelected. And so, of course, that's why they're running these ads. But hopefully she will be strong. She has been in the past, so hopefully she will be again.
Well, and I think one of my favorite moments, too, yesterday was when Lisa Blatt, who is describes herself as a liberal feminist lawyer out of Washington, D.C., was picked by Kavanaugh to introduce him. And she said she wished that there were 9 Justice Bader Ginsburgs on the court, very liberal justices. But she endorsed Kavanaugh as one who has the impeccable credentials, who really is qualified for the court. And I just thought, wow, what a breath of sanity and reason in the midst of all of this partisanship.
Right. And just to give another example of the insanity, yesterday there was a picture that kind of went viral on the internet about, well, Kavanaugh is sitting there and one of his aides is sitting behind him, and they were saying that she was giving a white supremacist symbol. She was kind of having her arms folded in front of her with an OK symbol with one of her hands. I mean, if you're sitting there for hours, your hands are going to, you know, do all kinds of things. And she happened to be sitting there with like this OK symbol, which they say is somehow a racist or white supremacist symbol. Of course, then that went viral, because the woman is of Hispanic origin. Like one of her parents is literally from, you know, an immigrant from, you know, Central America, and she's also Jewish. And so it's, you know, it's absurd to say that in the first place, but then this went viral with people responding to this insane tweet, because it was from somebody who's, you know, prominent political pundit, and this woman really took a lot of heat for it, and people were putting up pictures of people like Oprah Winfrey and Michael Jackson and, you know, all kinds of people giving exactly the same symbol. But that's the insanity here, is like trying to tie any kind of negativity to Kavanaugh that's possible.
What I wouldn't give for some healthy and constructive conversation. That's Dr. Ken Kaiser, who is the chair of communications here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Again, if you want to join the conversation, you can call or text the studio at 877-933-2484. And Ken, when we come back from break, I'm going to ask you about some other headlines that came out yesterday, including a new ad from Nike that was in support of the NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick, who has been out of the NFL for a couple of years because he started the protest of bending his knee during the national anthem, and Nike came out in support of that, and that, of course, caused a firestorm as well. So lots more to come with Kent Kaiser on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm with Dr. Kent Kaiser. And Kent, I'm just curious, if I really wanted to pick up an instrument later in life like this at 47 years old, how long would it take me to learn the bagpipes? Like, you know, you're able to go out to California and it's super inspiring to me. How long would it take me to learn the bagpipes?
Well, you're probably more talented than me. I've only been at it for 6 or 7 years, but there's one guy in the band who's moved up into the better band already. He's been at it for only 3, so
wow.
It doesn't take that long, really, because we have a great instructor, really.
Okay, well, as you're out globetrotting, just don't forget us here on Faith Radio Mornings. Call in a little bit. Let us know, you know, the other famous people that you're meeting. Well, so much to get to. Obviously, it came out yesterday. What was a pretty controversial ad. I suppose on some level, people say that all publicity is good publicity. But this one had me a little confused as to why Nike would come out at the start of the NFL season and publicly support as thoroughly as they seem to Colin Kaepernick's stance to protest the national anthem. I don't know of a situation where a company will come out and potentially divide their clientele in terms of who would purchase from them and who's not. But talk us here in communications. Talk us through what's happening here.
There's two sides to this. There's the cultural and there's the economic. And on the cultural side, most Americans probably, or a lot of Americans probably disagree with Colin Kaepernick. And I mean, you know, just to give some indication of like how he's on the wrong side of, you know, the culture, none other than Mahmoud Ahmadinejad wrote on Twitter, the NFL season will start this week. Unfortunately, once again, Kaepernick is not on an NFL roster, even though he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And Ted Cruz responded to that. And, you know, Ahmadinejad is a dictator of Iran. Okay. So Ted Cruz responds, when a radical anti-Semite, anti-American Iranian dictator emphatically agrees with you, maybe that's a sign that the NFL, Nike, you're all on the wrong side of the American people. And so that's sort of the cultural side. But looking at the economic side, this is not a matter of it's really quite different. This is an economic move on Nike's part. I mean, just to look back, just last year, Colin Kaepernick wasn't even on an NFL roster, and he was in the top 50 in NFL jersey sales. So Nike made a business move here. They know that they've got this market. They've got a market that's willing to pay. And so this isn't a matter of a bunch of woke middle-aged white men getting together in rooms to figure out an advertising strategy that's going to be cutting edge or something. This is totally a business move where they know where the multi-millions of dollars are going to come from. So,
well, and it's fascinating to watch because they sponsor the NFL, and for the next 10 years they have a contract with the NFL.
Yeah.
So it did put the NFL in a bit of an awkward position as it's getting ready to kick off this Sunday, the regular season.
But, I mean, this is nothing out of the ordinary. This is a multi-million dollar company giving multi-millions to, you know, somebody who's already a multi-millionaire. So, I mean, it's just a lot of money, and they know this isn't – this isn't like some capricious, you know, act on the part of Nike. This is, you know, well thought out. And by the way, they've been paying him. I mean, they've been paying – Nike's been paying him for the last year. So even while he didn't have a contract with the NFL, he still had the sponsorship. So this isn't something new either. It's just that they sat on this and waited for what they thought would be the optimal moment. And so here we are, you know, and they're looking back in time and like what's the – particular point in history when you want to do this, and that's exactly what they do. Totally a business move, and I'm sure that they'll make money off of it. And people are talking about boycotting Nike. I know that the president says it's a bad business move, but the reality is that boycotts never work, and people forget about them very quickly. And I always talked about that with my students when we're looking at boycotts in history and looking at public relations problems or cases. Boycotts never work. I'll give an example. Do you know that there's a boycott that's been going on for like 30 or 40 years against Nestle? No, nobody knows it, but it's still there. And it's because of their unethical practices in selling baby formula in Africa. Nobody even knows, but it's there. I mean, but how long did that boycott last? There's probably three people in the world who observe that particular boycott because nobody even knows.
Yeah, I had no idea. I'm still buying the Crunch bars and drinking hot chocolate. I had no idea that there's a protest going on relative to these things.
No, and I'm pretty sure there's still a boycott against Target for its policies, and yet who remembers? Everybody just goes, even if they, for a moment, honor a boycott, they forget quickly and it blows over and they start shopping in the same old patterns as the past. So, no, but in the case of Nike, I don't think they'll suffer one bit.
Now, it's Dr. Ken Kaiser just helping us through some of the headlines in the morning. Now, we'll take a short break. We got a couple of texts coming into studio on this too, so read those as we wrap up the first hour of our show. Well, thanks for texting into the show here. A couple texts come in relative to the Judge Kavanaugh hearings. One is, wouldn't the Democrats have acted this way no matter how perfect the candidate for the Supreme Court would have been just because it's Trump who nominated them? I think very true, given the fact that statements were coming out before we even knew who the nominee was. Both sides of the aisle functioning that way. Great text. Another one is, besides, who would have actually read all of the 46,000 pages? Did they actually read all of that in the health care bill back in the day? And it just speaks to the political partisanship of jamming things through on Washington. Really appreciate the text and Kent Kaiser talking us through the situation this morning. We'll take a break for top of the hour news. When we come back, Bill English of Bible and Business, one of our favorite segments, is joining us in studio, and we will be talking about the importance of governance if you want to have a healthy business.